Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. As always, my name's Eric.
Hi, I'm Raymond.
And we are back for episode 26. Sorry about the delay. We had some technical difficulties. So we are trying out some new software tonight. Definitely want to hear your guys' feedback. Some of the key things this new software will provide is, for one, accelerated audio quality. So let us know if we sound richer, more robust, more professional. Well, I don't know about that. Ray will sound more professional. I will. But we're really excited about this. It kind of eliminates some of our ad hoc methods we were using before, using Skype and another third-party system to record the Skype call. All this is kind of taken care of for us and should also help us get recordings out a little bit quicker. Nonetheless, we did record last week and it went up in smoke. So we will do our best to kind of cover some of those topics. But in the fast-moving world of 40K, things change quickly. And one of the key things is the 2018 season is upon us. Ray, are you excited for the new season?
A little bit.
A little bit? You still have quite a bit of school left, so you're not sure how many tournaments you're going to get to this year?
I'll be happy if I make one.
Well, last year's goal. You're almost done. Okay, pile on through. But we've had a few tournaments, so the first one we've got to talk about here is the Glass City GT, which took place in Toledo, Ohio. Now, I know what you're thinking. Toledo, Ohio, the butt of many jokes. But for those of you who used to play 40K competitively in 5th edition, Toledo was one of those small meccas in the meta. Codex Toledo team, as well as the Toledo Game Room, was one of the hotbeds for a competitive 40K. And nice to see them back in the fold of things. So let's go over this tournament. And by the way, a little bit of a curveball as we go talk about this event. They actually use battle points, going old school. So those of you not familiar with battle points, it is basically your score. It doesn't matter if you win or lose, it's who scores the most points. Will that be a factor? Spoiler alert, it just might. Ray, where do you stand on battle points versus win-loss?
So, for battle points do a good job of expressing how well you do, but win-loss is win-loss. I've always been a supporter of utilizing both. Now, which one to put above the other? I think we could argue. This is a good case for that, as we'll describe. But that's kind of why I've liked the I like what ITC does, where there's 1,000 points for someone for a win, the 500 points for the tie. That helps clear it up.
It is. It's sort of a hybrid system. So, you know, back in the day, you know, battle points, especially back, this is like 3rd and 4th edition, when the Games Workshop was actually helping with the development of tournaments, they used a strict battle point system. So, for example, Ray and I are playing, and the mission says, okay, you get 3 points for every objective controlled. Ray holds 3, I hold 2, Ray wins 6-4. Meanwhile, the table next to me, they kind of went at each other and killed it, so only hold 1 or 2 objectives. Those guys are, even though the guy won, he only held 2 objectives, he'd be in a lower standing than I would. So it became very important to play to the mission, which was kind of nice. It's nice of balancing towards being tabling armies. You know, you wouldn't just win by tabling. However, you get some peculiarities with that. And so towards 5th edition, you start seeing this turn towards win-loss. And the interesting thing about win-loss was, and that was some of the complaints about it, didn't matter whether Ray beat me by 1 point or 400 points, a win to win's a loss, so I would fall down to the losing bracket, and there would be no degradation, is not the right word, differentiation between myself and the other players who also lost in the previous round. So the current ITC system is sort of a hybrid. You have a win-loss format in that, but it is actually a battle point system. The trick is you get 41 points now with the new champions mission. 41 points are in play, but if you actually win, you get an additional 1,000 points, which was Ray alluding to earlier. So it's important to win, but then all of you are then all the winners from that particular round. So if you got it's end of round 2, and you've got several players at 2-0, how are they split up? You have those additional battle points from the particular missions. So it's an interesting hybrid, and it's interesting to see Battle Points making a comeback. So with no further ado, your top eight from this year's 2018 Glass City GT, which, by the way, I don't know, they call it a GT, but they were just three short of a major. They had 53 players. So pretty close. In eighth place, we had Ryan Hess playing Death Guard. He went 3-2 with 161 battle points. Brandon Valley came in seventh place. He was playing Dark Angels, 165 battle points, going 4-1. And here we talk about some of the peculiarities. Ted Berger came in sixth place, going 3-2. So he actually had one fewer loss than Brandon, but he did have 166 points. And Ted was playing Astra Militarum. Daniel Sansom with 169 points, excuse me. Three wins, one loss, one tie. Daniel was playing Chaos Space Marines. Brad Chester, yep, that same Brad Chester made the top eight from LVO just a few weeks ago. Still playing Eldari, went 4-1 and put himself into fourth place with 169 points. Brian Hancock zoomed right ahead of that with 182 points, also going 4-1 with his Alatok. And number two, interesting, he went undefeated at 5-0, scored 189 points. It's Josh Death with Death Guard, and he had the growing Poxwalker list, which we're going to talk about shortly. But your 2018 Glass City champion is Alan Pajama Pants Baramovich, playing Eldari. Interesting enough, he also had 189 points, but went 4-1. But so he was able to eke out Josh Death for the title. So interesting peculiarity. I think it's even more interesting that Josh Death actually beat Alan in round four.
That seems off to me.
It seems a little off as well. My personal experience is something similar to that. I was in a tournament. It was a six-round tournament going into the final round. I was in contention to win it, and I only had one win. One win, one loss, three ties. Because I scored so many points in my three ties, I was actually getting, out of a 20-point system, I had like 16 points in each one of my games except for my loss. And even that game, I got 11 points. Weird. I don't know. It's not for me. You guys decide. Let me know what you think on the Facebook page. It's a great debate, and it's one of those I don't think will ever go away. But Josh Death's list kind of got pushed aside a little bit at LVO. I wanted to talk about it a little bit because it's a very interesting list. It's very popular over in Europe, by the way. This is something like in their meta, especially in England, do you plan against it? So, Ray, do you happen to have that list handy?
For whatever reason, it's not letting me open up the list.
All right. So, what I do remember from it, the overall concept is that he has a very large squad of Poxwalkers. And I can't remember if this is a stratagem or a... I'm pretty sure it's a stratagem. So what happens is he's got this large blob, and he pushes it forward. And you're like, okay, great. Sooner or later, I'm going to have to deal with it. The problem with it is he's got Typhus, which buffs the walkers. I believe he also has the Forge World character, who's eluding my... the name right now. Long and short of it is that the Poxwalkers get this ability that every time they kill a model in close combat, they add a Poxwalker to their unit. So the unit continues to grow and grow and grow to the point where it's occupying a large part of the field and you cannot get to the other objectives on the other side of the table. And it grows and grows and grows. Something I've heard as many as 110 Poxwalkers on the table. So that's kind of, and then you use the other, like a Demon Prince, which has mobility and hitting power to deal with the other threats in the other opponent's army. I've heard it used with Fire Raptors. There's all kinds of variations of it, but that's the general concept. So be aware of it. I'll be honest with you, I have not discovered a be-all, end-all way of defeating it other than try to shoot it at range. But even that, sooner or later, it's going to be in your face. You got to take objectives. So we'll have to play that out and see what we can come up with. Ray, any other thoughts on the Glass City GT?
It would have been really interesting to have seen it become a major tournament.
I would agree. Be a nice resurgence there for the Toledo scene. I also would like to, if they had submitted some more of the lists. Many of the players did not submit a list to the BCP app. So therefore, we're a little bit limited in what we have. We know what Brad Chester brought. probably something similar to LVO, but I find it odd that Pajama Pants is playing Eldar. So I've always known him as more of a Chaos player and a Guard player. So I'm curious to see what he brought. Maybe we'll find some more information there. All right, and that is your tournament news for this week. Ray, you've been following the community page there for good old GW?
A little bit.
Yep. So as Ray has reminded me, I need to stop whining about this, but I get 10 seconds every show. Lots of news about Dark Elves. None of them have to do with the 40K kind. So yes, it's been 17 days since the announcement of my new codex, and it has yet to get even a scrap of rumors. But those Age of Sigmar Dark Elves, those are some serious conversion bait. I'm looking for finding a way to get those models into 40K. Those are pretty cool looking.
Yeah, so they've only shown two models that are actually new so far, but there's definitely quality there.
There's definitely. There was a sneak peek today, late today, that so you've got, for those of you who haven't seen them, if you remember, one of the best-selling models for Dark Elves is that Blood Shrine rack, and there's a model in there, which is really hard to find in bits because you can only buy the model in that box set. Is this sort of priest who's got like a Medusa body. So it's got like a snake lower half and has Medusa head and all kinds of pointy ears and spiky bits sticking out of it. Very popular model. Well, basically what they did is they took the old Dark Elf Queen. What was her name in the old rules?
Moranthi.
Yeah, Moranthi.
Morath.
We're close. Okay. And she comes in her usual elven form. And then she, I guess, from what they hinted on the community page, as she fights, she transforms into this large Medusa character. Haven't seen her next to another model. Not sure how big this thing is. I don't know if it's like Riptide big, or is it just like a monstrous creature big? I'm not really sure. But it's pretty cool looking. And they've got these nifty harpy looking models, and they've got these other snake infantry guys that coming out. It's a very different look for Dark Elves, almost said it. So love to use that in Dark Eldar someday. But we'll see as they come out. So no Dark Eldar Codex rumors. But guess what, boys and girls? I've got Tau rumors. That's right.
Get your salt shakers ready.
Oh, it's super salty. This is like a soft pretzel like mixed with like tomato soup. This is like super salty. Before you like... Have you ever run into that with a friend of yours that tries to make condensed soup and didn't read the label and forgot to add the can of water?
No.
This is what the... you're lucky. It's disgusting. Anyway, add like 4 tablespoons of soy sauce on top of that. These are super salty, but they do come from our good friend at Fayette 212. For those of you on the East Coast, this was pretty late at night. It was about 4 o'clock West Coast time. This was posted. So supposedly somebody has a copy of the Tau Codex and basically says, I had a tournament coming up in the next few weeks. I was going to play either Custodes or Thousand Sons, and I dropped both of those armies. I am playing Tau, and I'm also buying Riptides and Hammerheads, specifically with Ion Cannons, because I don't have them. So if you have not seen a Riptide, except for on a milk carton, supposedly they're making a comeback. So let's start with the bad news. So what is not changing or some of the detriments? So I guess for the rest of us, it's good news. If you don't play Tau, you'd be excited to hear this. You're only allowed one commander per detachment. So commander spam is gone, allegedly. Next key thing, there will be no changes to the Markolite table. Now, I know a lot of Tau players are not happy about that. There's no improvements to ballistic skill. So whatever's in the index, that stays the same. Railguns are also not improving. Wow, Eric, these rumors stink. Do you have any good news? So what this rumor monger is saying is they make up for it with a ridiculous amount of point reductions. So when you start seeing the points per output when it comes to firepower, the tower is supposed to be absolutely deadly. He doesn't name anything particular, but he does finally give out one little hint at the end. For example, there's a weapon that is heavy 18, strength 6, minus one AP, two damage. This is a gun for only 35 points.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure what gun that is, but that's, I'm just like heavy 18. What? So interesting. So, because when you have that kind of points drops, then now you're going to talk about large number of models on the table, a lot more suits on the table, board presence, and that kind of firepower, that could get ugly real fast. And I do believe Tau still have their early warning override systems where they can attack models coming at a reserve. So
yeah,
Alpha Strike may not be your only solution. So we'll see if they're true. So anyway, kind of leads into our discussion for this evening. Let's get ready for the 2018 season. So Ray and I are going to dive into what preparations we're making for 2018. Sure.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, we're back after the break, and we're talking about getting ready for the 2018 season. Super excited. The drama building up at this point. We have already had our first GT of the season. So kind of looking ahead, both we'll kind of have two perspectives, both as a player, as a hobbyist, and then lastly, as a TO, what we're going to be doing differently in 2018. So, Ray, what's on your docket for 2018? What armies you think about playing, and what's your game plan moving forward?
I think my primary is still going to be Thousand Sons. Though I may still end up playing Necrons at least once before the season is over. I think my big goal, though, is to try to get my armies all painted up so I'm not going around with a great tide like I have done in the past.
Yeah, you and me both. It's funny to bring up Thousand Sons. I've been hearing quite a bit of talk that they may be the answer to Eldar dominance. So specifically when you combine All is Dust with cover saves. And so the idea is that you would drop down, for example, the Scarab Cult Terminators.
Yep.
So they come down, they got a 2+ save, and then they get an additional +1 for All is Dust, and an additional +1 if you drop them down in cover. So, well, big deal. You're still wounding on ones. So your opponent's Dark Reapers then spend the stratagem. We're going to blow them away. We got a -2 AP. Well, I got +2 to my armor save, so I'm back at 2+. Go ahead. Shoot away. And oh, wait. You're done shooting now? Okay, great. Now it's my psychic phase. So you can either smite, you can, I believe they have their own version of, they have access to warp time and quite a bit of weaponry as well that pumps out a lot of shots, but not only very high AP. I think all their guns are like -2, -3 across the board from storm bolters, which really hurt Eldar really fast because I believe even Dark Reapers are only 3+ save, 4+ save. So also they're saving on 6s. You can start eliminating stuff quite a bit very quickly. And that's just one unit. Need two units? Oh, by the way, they've got that relic that allows them to teleport a unit into range.
So now one thing that's... I don't know how big it is actually out here because I haven't really been able to catch much tournaments, but... One thing I hear the guys talk about a lot is just using the Rangers. So, you know, there's running them where they can get the extra cover. Having a unit of Scarabs drop right in front of them will pretty much cancel that out.
It's true. Yeah, usually the Rangers are used for their scouting ability to kind of extend the deployment zone to prevent an opponent's Alpha Strike, but you're right, they ignore cover take them out pretty quick. I mean, they're still toughness three. They don't. If you hit them, they're pretty much going to go splat. But so yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. Plus, the those Angors are still, you know, pretty crick up on their strength four, I believe.
They've got an end one save. Yeah. They're running around with minus one, basically minus one chain swords. I mean, they're not actually sword, but they got the, they get the extra deck.
Interesting. All right, I didn't realize they had that. So that's something. Wow. Yeah, against LR, most of their I think Guardians 4 up save. Even with got like Howling Banshees with their high AP swords, you know, with that invul save keeps them in the game. So Thousand Zons might be the answer for Eldar. So interesting also see when the Necron Codex comes out, they used to be the arch enemy of the Eldar. So I'm curious to see if they have any anti-Eldar shenanigans as well. Still trying to find out what exactly these big hints that GW gave at LVO about making the army more mobile, what that entails. So interesting to see as those particular things come out. So as we mentioned, we're still waiting patiently. Well, I'm not waiting patiently for the three codices to come out. So we were kind of going through it, Ray and I, talking prior to the show, not ruling out that maybe a double or even a triple release on the same weekend. Since
the only codices are going to be coming with a model is the Necrons, and that's just a cryptech. So that's a that's just a character clan pack.
Before I forget, Games Workshop did announce at Toy Fair, New York Toy Fair today, that they a standalone game involving Necrons and Space Marines, and it's kind of like a dungeon crawl type game, which at the it's kind of interesting, called Space Marine Adventures, and then Survive the Necron Labyrinth. So it's kind of a little. Yeah, so
you don't survive that.
What's that?
You don't survive a Necron Labyrinth.
No, of course not. But it's interesting. You get to choose your own Space Marine character. So there's four Space Marines from four different chapters, and they go up against, I think there's about six or seven Necron plastics in there. And looking over it, I did not see the new cryptic. That's what made me think of it. So I was kind of going over it, going like, huh, is that why they came out with the plastic cryptic? But it was hard to see from the blurry Twitter photo there. So,
yeah.
In case you're wondering, the other announcement at Toy Fair was a mini version of Blood Bowl, which they did back in second edition Blood Bowl, called Blood Bowl Blitz. So if you're interested, hey, it's there. But anyway, back to 40K. So yeah, Necrons should be quite exciting. Curious to see what they bring. They were my original army when I first got into 40K. So can't wait to see what they do with the army. Other news trying to come through, looking at what we're expecting. So we look at the pace. We're still waiting on Sisters of Battle. We're still waiting on Space Wolves. We're still waiting on Gene Stealer Cult. And, of course, the venerable orcs. I can't believe they've not come out with a codex for orcs yet. But, yes, they're kind of towards the end of the list. So that's right there. That's five more codices. So eight. And supposedly all of them are supposed to be out by summer. So I don't know if that – and usually the speculation has been that that meant by the end of the fiscal year for GW, which is July. So we're already midway through February. That leaves, what, 5 months? 12 codices? Yeah. That sounds like one every 2 weeks to me.
At least.
So, got to see it. Again, I can't wait for these to come out. We've kind of feels weird not to have a new codex release. It's been a little over a month now since Thousand Suns dropped. And feels weird not to have one. So, anyway, so that's some of the things going on there. I agree with you with the painting thing. Last year, I spent most of the season getting used to 8th edition and chasing the meta. So consequently, my collection almost doubled in size for my one particular army, which means most of it did not get painted at this point. So there are several models that I wanted to add to the collection as 8th edition rolled around, much like the Vortex Beast. It is still out of stock, trying to collect on those and getting creative with various conversions. to no avail. So my goal is to actually get my models painted, though my models actually are famous.
Yeah, Ray, did finally, you see that? The armpit of the 40K, what would you call them? News aggregator?
Hey, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
It's the only website that I ever have to worry about when it comes to 40K, getting inundated with pop-ups.
It actually killed my old phone. I could not. So what we're talking about is Battle of Lost Souls. As you probably have guessed, yeah, the amount of pop-up ads actually killed my old phone. They couldn't open the page because there's so many ads. But as you frequent, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm just taking it you've been on Battle of Lost Souls, and every day they have a was a picture of the day or image of the day. I forgot what they call it, a gallery, daily gallery. I forgot some sort of word for it. And there I was desperately looking for news about Dark Eldar and Drukhari. And I'm like, hey, wait a minute. What's that? And it was a picture of my army from last year's LVO. And surprisingly, because the other problem with Battle of Lost Souls is they tend to attract a very negative crowd, especially in their comment section. So I was ready to take it on the chin and get absolutely ripped apart about my paint job. But I was surprised how many positive comments I got. So, and some very constructive criticism. So I will take that back to the rest of the army. But very excited. Yeah, so if you see a whole bunch of orange Reaver jet bikes for no apparent reason on Battle of Lost Souls, that's my army. Woo! Anyway, I love to bring them back to 8th edition. They're barely being used right now. Anyway, so yeah, lots of painting to get to. I've got lots of other projects as a tournament organizer. We have a big event coming up, which you'll hear about later in the show. But one of the things, as we've now got a full season of 8th edition under our belts, one of the things we sat down with my co-tournament organizer, Don, who has been on the show several times, as well as some of the other local tournament organizers, got feedback from players, making changes to the terrain that we have. And the biggest thing we wanted to make changes to is adding multi-levels. Those used to be a major headache, a major rules conundrum. Not the case in 8th edition. They're kind of required. Also wanted to actually make terrain that had blocked line of sight on the first floor as opposed to declaring it. So basically that means 70% of my terrain has to be redone. So I'm kind of spending valuable time trying to, where most people are working on lists, thinking of new ways to make that terrain and make it accessible, easy to use, as well as easy to transport. So we'll have updates. I do have a prototype that I'm working on this week, and we'll give you guys news as we get closer to the event. Other key things looking at, we're getting ready for that tournament, is, you know, some of the logistics behind any major tournament. And that's, yeah, we're trying to go for, we're expecting to get over that 56 mark this year. We've been flirting with 45 every year. And so this is something we're looking forward to. Just make sure the space is there, make sure all the tables are set up, a couple new ideas that we want to get through, make sure we're rewarding all the players for a good time, and really, you know, hammering out a clear message to all the players, what expectations are in terms of terrain, in terms of setup, in terms of time management. So a couple ideas as we go through that. So really excited as we move forward. And but it's just, yeah, it's becoming a very large undertaking. So we'll give more updates as we get closer to tournament time. Probably bring Don on to talk about it as well. So, Ray, with your school schedule, you said you're lucky to get to one tournament this year. Are you trying to do the destination tournament, or are you just trying to do something local?
It'll end up being something local. I know it will.
I'm trying to look ahead. We've got quite a few events are in a local area, but a lot of our local group has kind of got the tournament buzz. So we're just talk of, you know, renting a van and having sharing the costs, going to some of the destinations. We're pretty fortunate here in the Southwest that we have several tournaments with only a few hours drive. Likewise, in the Northeast has a similar idea. So there's quite a few destinations to get to. One thing that looking forward to, I said it earlier this year, I knew I couldn't make it to LVO this year, so I was looking forward to going next year. And of course, the tournament is on my wife's birthday.
Ooh.
So we're going to have to figure a way out of this one. We're going to be in a little bit of trouble. So, yeah, we'll figure something out. Anyway, so some of the big changes there, ITC does not seem to be announcing any major changes at this point in terms of their scoring when it comes to the champions missions, which is good because there were several changes last year midstream and had to relearn those missions several times over. But they are talking about a lot of changes to the hobby track. So it's one of the reasons why Ray and I are talking about getting our models painted.
Might as well.
Yeah. So, Ray, what has been? So, I mean, you've done quite a bit with your models in terms of, you know, painting and building in the past. You know, painting rubrics and all that. You know, how does that play into your overall strategy when you're working on appearance?
Honestly, I've never really done it in mind with anybody's painting rubric. In the past, I was one of those people who would paint the model and then leave the base black. I like to argue that it was just black because it was a shadow. And because...
It's a good argument.
I was always afraid of the idea of basing. Part of it was I started out with Necrons. I remember seeing like all those really cool-looking painted crystals or gems, and I could never do that. So it got to the point where I just made it a point to try to avoid the base at all costs. Now I've got one of those paints that's actually made for basing. I've kind of gained a bit of an idea behind it, so it really just comes down to the tediousness of doing that over and over and over.
Right. Well, apparently the feedback I got from Bella Lost Souls fans is that my bases stink. So I was like, okay, I need to work on those. I don't know what else, you know, one of the things looking at it, they're just your typical gray and then dry brush, lighter gray than white. So Brandon gave us the hints of maybe some tufts. I could probably add a couple random skulls here and there to spruce them up a little bit. Those definitely things. I definitely want to add some more edge highlighting. Boy, I can't get that word out. But I've always worked with the old GW rubric in mind that your army should have a cohesive theme, your unit leaders should stand out from the rest of the unit, and your HQ choices should stand out from the army. Unfortunately, usually that means you put them on a bigger base so they stand up a little taller, which means they get shot easier. Okay. But kind of think of some new ways to, and I usually compensate for my average to below average painting with conversions. So people are like, oh, that's really cool looking, not realizing that it's a puss poor paint job, but oh well. So a couple pieces here and there add a little variety to things. But definitely looking forward to this new hobby track coming out from Frontline Gaming. So some of the key changes there. Looking ahead, so we talked a lot about all these codex changes. Which codex or codices? Which two do you think are going to have the biggest impact on the meta?
Then between the three, or you mean between all the ones that we're still waiting on?
All the ones we're still waiting on.
I could see Tau being a big one. Outside of that, I would have to say. Honestly, I could see orcs being a big changer. We've seen them do really well just with the index. How well are they going to do when they've actually got a full-blown codex?
Yeah, orcs are definitely one of the strongest index armies, and they've weathered the storm. You know, one of the things, so just kind of catch my words, you know, when 8th edition first dropped, I wrote an article, or actually three articles for Frontline Gaming, about Trukhari, and they were kind of best improved, but for whatever reason, they weren't able to keep pace with the Codex armies. Orcs are not the case. You know, orcs are still very competitive today against Codex armies without any stratagems. So yeah, you start giving them stratagems, what else do they bring to the table? Now, granted, the stratagem that they got in Chapter Approved were head scratchers. I'm not really sure why they're given those, but I've seen them in play. They are semi-useful, and if it's the only stratagem you got, run with it. But, I'd be really curious to see. There's not really... It's not like other indexes where you know this unit and this unit's going to get nerfed. You know, they're pretty well balanced. I really don't see one or two units being overly over the top. Maybe Storm Boys because they're a popular choice, but I don't think they really need to get nerfed. I think it's more this the rest of the army needs to be brought up to equal their power. So anyway, curious to see what kind, especially one of the things we've not seen in like forever is actual rules for clans. I mean, are we going to get real rules for Speed Freaks and Bad Moons and I forgot the other, now I'm blanking on the other names, but that'd be really cool.
I don't think I would expect them to be too out there. I think I'd expect them to be fairly similar to some of the things we've seen that have come out so far.
No, I agree with you. They seem to be recycling the same traits, but it's just the idea that you... I mean, think about it. If you're an orc player, and all of a sudden, okay, you can choose one of these 5-6 clans, you get a free ability on top of what you've been playing with. That, you know, basic logic would say, you're going to get better right off the bat.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, first thing that comes to mind is if they get the strategy where you're minus one to hit them when they're more than 12 inches away, if they get that... they'll be a real contender. Because if there's one army that like charge and be within 12 inches, it's them. They won't stay back. They won't use it to stay back. They'll use it to get there where they want to be more easily.
Yeah, that's a good point. One of our buddies was playing Orcs on Friday night in our local game store, and I was reading through the index because there are a couple units. I was like, what do they do? I forgot. Buggies have a scout rule. They can come in any table edge, which I didn't realize. Now, the only downside is they have to be, I think, touching or they have to be very close to the table edge. But they've got enough movement and enough range where they could. So they're coming in back edges, side edges. So imagine the bulk of your army being more than 12 inches away. They got that minus one to hit. And then all of a sudden, these things come out on turn two or turn three on your flanks. And then the army's on top of you. That's pretty scary.
Yeah.
Defcopters are pretty nasty as well. They got a rocket launcher, and then they can attack with their blades, which I think is hilarious. It's very orky, but they also have another scout ability, and they have some movement shenanigans they can pull off. So, yeah, I would agree. Probably orcs is probably the one of those that could really upset the meta. The other one I have is Gene Stealer Cult. When they first came out, the idea that this whole army could jump out, rip your face off, and then, you're not in range anymore? They're going to go back in reserve. That was incredibly frightening. I mean, there was just no answer for that. And unfortunately, most of their strength was in formations. And formations are now, whatever strength you had in formations is usually creeping up in some sort of stratagem. So, yeah, their index isn't quite that strong right now because there's no stratagems to go with it. That's an army I think that could sneak up because it's just one of those you're planning for your next tournament and you go, okay, I gotta plan for demons, I gotta plan for Eldar, I gotta plan for Space Marines. That kind of works for Chaos. I'm good to go. And then Gene Stealer Cult, round one, I don't know what to do. And then, they jump out and rip your face off. So I think that could... Yeah, it could be one of those. Yeah, I think Gene Stealer Cults could be kind of that sleeper army where if you have all the answers for other armies, you have your answers for Eldar, you have your answer for Power Armor, you may have an answer for Orcs, but then all of a sudden, these guys come out, they Alpha Strike, they fall back, Alpha Strike you again on a later turn, and it just catches you off guard. I mean, one of those things that just always baffled me. I never had an answer for Gene Stealer Cult other than I hope my opponent rolls poorly. And yeah, in the new Warhammer that we're playing, you're all about screens, but screens are, they can take the first hit, but the idea is that you hit the screen and now you have a chance to attack back. Gene Stealer Cult has the opportunity to hit your screen, at least what they used to do, and then fall and back to the shadows and then strike again. It's pretty scary. So I'd be curious to see as they come out and see what they can think. They can do a lot of damage to
them. Let's not forget this particular point. Also, there's the fact that by having a battalion. I think it's a battalion. We required a battalion, but a unit of a, what is it? Detachment of. You could potentially have a detachment of Tyranids and a detachment of Astromilitarum all under one list.
Yeah, which is usually how you're seeing them now. And I could just see that. It's a good point, because now you got the one of the things, if I remember, I used to run Gene Stealer cults, so probably you remember, they kind of lacked a little anti-tank other than the rock crusher saws or something like that, which is
they had the occasional heavy weapon, which was fairly pointless back in 7th edition. And then outside of that, the best thing you could have was the rock crusher, although they did have some selection of the Lehman Russ. I just don't remember which turrets they had the choice of.
So now they get the full complement of whatever Astra Militarum has. You could bring in, I guess you could even bring on Scions. I mean, wow, you could bring in all kinds of options at this point. And then, you bring in the whatever you want from the Tyranids as well. It's pretty scary. So scary, scary stuff. So, we'll keep you up to date as more news breaks throughout the 2018 season, as I'm trying to say. But meanwhile, let's look at our current rankings, because we've had some tournaments. The new top 10 for 2018, first one of the season, right after the break. All right, guys, we are back with our first 2018 top 10 ITC rankings. Great. There's a lot of new names in the top 10, so let's get right to it. First, in 10th place, actually, hang on one second. Guys, we've got breaking news. They have just been updated as we were recording. So quick switcheroo here. This is what happens with live radio here, which is then recorded and sits in my hard drive for 2 days. But awesome. Anyway, so in 10th place, we have Liam Hackett. He is playing Space Marines. He is currently in 10th place. 9th place, David Uzawa. He is playing Imperial Soup in 9th place. Mitch Pelham, you've heard his name before several times during the LVO, made a run of it last year. He's currently in 8th place with Talarin. In 7th place, James Coons. He is playing a Latok. 6th place, current Team American. Captain America, what I'm trying to say. Leader of Team America, Sean Naden, crawling into 6th place. In 5th place, Tyler White with Imperial Guard. 4th place, I hope I pronounced your last name, sir, is Kalen Retescule. He is playing Chaos Space Marines. 3rd place, Patrick McKinney. 2nd place, Jeremy Applebaum with Sisters of Battle. And currently, your number one 2018 ITC player very early on in the season, Gary Frank with Tyranids. He's rocking at 207 points currently after 2 events. So very interesting top 10. It's funny that we've got 3 guard players, and we talked about several guard players doing well in the Glass City GT, yet guard was almost nowhere to be found at LVO.
It's interesting.
We'll see. Maybe it took people that people that long to paint them.
Could be.
I don't know. So yeah, if you only got one Eldar, the 2 Eldar players in the top 10, compared to the 5 that we had in the top 8 at LVO, we only have 1 Chaos player, which is interesting. It's something I heard. I was listening to an interview with Nick Nottavati, who won the ITC last year as well as LVO. He feels that Chaos is not kept up with the current meta. So I'm curious to see if that continues, or if players find a new combination of using Chaos Space Marines to be competitive again. I thought that was interesting. We're not very few Chaos players at LVO, and only 1 in the top 10 here for ITC in the early goings.
I mean, just because you're not saying it now doesn't mean you won't see it again in the near future.
I would agree, and especially because we've not seen the Demon Codex really take hold yet in the meta. I think it's still a little too new at this particular point. All right, Ray, what new ITC events do we have coming up next weekend?
Alright, so I took a good look to see if I could find how many GT level events or higher I could find. So far, only one actually popped up. That's the 6th annual Berry Bash at the Tangle Creek Golf and Country Club in Thornton, Ontario. They do have their ticket prices listed up for anybody who's interested in possibly going. But that's the only one I could locate for this weekend.
It's a good event to go to. A long history and several Canada's best, but quite a few Americans also make the trek up north. So definitely a cool event to attend. And Scarry from Scarcast, actually, his podcast, he is the host of that event. So get to talk to some 40K celebrities while you're up there. So eager to see the results from that particular tournament next week. Rain, any other thoughts this week before we wrap up the show?
It's really early in the season. Take the time to make sure you understand how you want to play your army. Now's the time to get the kinks out. Get your games in on the weekdays or the weekends when there's not a tournament. And be an honest player. When mistakes happen, recognize it. Have something to write it down in so you remember. Because it's going to get real competitive real fast.
Also think one of the things, if you do stumble out of the gate, just take a look at what happened last year during the ITC season. It can be easily won towards the latter half of the season. There are a lot of big events coming up. Our first of our, you know, they need to come up with a new designation. Major isn't big enough to describe some of these larger events, but our first true mega event, Adepticon, is right around the corner, mid-March in Schaumburg, Illinois, which is right outside Chicago. So that'll be your first real large event for 2018. So be curious to see, as that's always a big draw and a very interesting meta from the Midwest. I'd be curious to see how that all pans out. So, again, we'll have updates as news breaks. In the meantime, thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. My name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And we'll talk to you guys next week.